November 1st, 2014, Dinosaurus, the animated live stage event of the 21st century, will be presented at the Edre Auditorium, located in the McKenzie Fine Arts Theater on the campus of Henry Ford College at 5101 Evergreen Road. Through virtual reality, performance capture, and animation, audiences will be completely merged into an entertaining virtual environment that includes 20 feet tall dinosaurs and real physical effects. Performances run from November 1st until November 22nd, 2014, with two sets of performances offered separately for the general public and public elementary schools. Ticket prices for children under 12 are $5 and adult tickets are $8. Seats are limited and tickets are going fast, so reserve your seats today. Get showtimes and tickets online now at theater.hfcc.edu or visit vtl.hfcc.edu. Explore and discover the virtual world of 3D animation live at Henry Ford College's production of Dinosaurus.
Hey kids, Brian Oblivion here. Authentic rock and roll loser, and you're listening to the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. This is a pre-recorded show. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. Hi, I'm your host Lynn, and today we're discussing all things related to Friends of the Rouge, bugs, frogs, toads, you name it. With us we have Amy Lalonde Norman, Karen Hanna, and Aaron Cassidy. Thank you ladies for being here.
Thanks for having us.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. I want to know everything there is to know about Friends of the Rouge. And it's such a complex organization. I think the first thing we'll get out there is the webpage. And Amy, if you want to talk about that a little bit and things that are out on the website, because there's a lot.
Yeah, there is. On therouge.org, we have so much information, program information, event information, fundraising information, membership information, just a ton of info available. And if people are interested in learning more about our programs or what's going on in the Rouge, can click around and find so much, including old reports, videos, photos.
Okay, what kind of reports?
Annual reports, there's program reports. So the Rouge Education Project issues a new report each year. We have grant reports, as well as our volunteer monitoring, which are the bugs and the frogs and the toads that you mentioned.
Right.
And then our riparian corridor management and Rouge rescue reports are on there as well.
Okay, yeah. Fantastic. Well, let's get started however you ladies would like. And I don't know, Amy, if you'd like to get started with some of the different projects and programs. And
sure.
We'll talk in detail about what those are all about.
Okay. Well, this year, we're winding down for the year, so to speak, with the calendar year anyhow. And we are preparing for our annual meeting, which this year we're excited. In December, we'll have a green infrastructure panel discussion, and we'll have it moderated, and we'll be sharing some information with our members and those who attend the meeting. And then moving right into the new year, we're busy. We kick off, we have an Explore the Rouge series of activities that we do, encouraging people to come out, even in January, out into the Rouge River watershed to explore, to try something new, whether it's snowshoeing, hiking, biking, just hanging out with friends and walking around. So there's a lot going on, and then we move right into our other programs. Rouge Education Project is kicking off for spring water quality monitoring, and that's a big day, a big event. And then we have Rouge Rescue in mid-May, and then we move into some of our summer fundraising events, our Rouge Cruise in June.
Wow.
It's busy, very busy.
A lot of things to get ready for. Yeah. Why don't we start out with the Rouge, well, maybe I could ask that again. Why don't we get started with the Rouge Rescue? That's probably, I think, maybe one of the best known events that you guys have. Talk to the, you know, what is it? What is, how are we rescuing the Rouge?
Oh, well, it started, it's our flagship. It is how Friends of the Rouge came to be. Mm-hmm. There was this need to clean up the river, and Rouge Rescue was the event that kind of culminated, and then Friends of the Rouge became an organization. It is now going to be in its 29th year.
Wow.
Yeah, getting very close to that 30-year mark. That's incredible. And it's grown. I mean, we've gone from really cleaning up the river and pulling out lots of trash and cars and garbage and just undesirable things to now a little bit more stewardship, a little bit more of looking at how do we help the river from the land, and looking at plantings, removal of invasive species, and then planting gardens that are native, native plants to help with the water quality and erosion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's grown, and we've really, over the past 28 years, have had over 50,000 volunteers involved.
Wow.
So it's incredible. About 1,900 people come out each year at 40-plus different locations throughout the watershed and participate in activities.
The Rouge is a, lengthwise, is a huge piece of property, if you will. So what area are you focusing on, or are you taking on the entire river?
We're all over. We are all over the watershed, yeah. About 467 square miles. So we do programs everywhere. And if there are organizations or municipalities that are interested in hosting a Rouge Rescue site, for example, they kind of head that charge, and then our team members work with them to facilitate the activity.
Okay. And you're pulling out cars from the Rouge River?
There have been cars over the years.
That's crazy. I heard about a picnic table, and I thought that was pretty wild because that's large. And that was a number of years ago. A friend of mine was working at the project. So, then that takes place when?
This year, 2015 will be May 16th.
Okay, so that's in May. All right. And there's information definitely on
the
webpage about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Volunteers?
Absolutely. We ask people to check out the list. As we get closer, the list grows of all the locations so that people can go someplace near their home.
I see.
And people can sign up directly with the folks who are leading that site, or they can even call Cindy, who's our restoration manager. And she's from pretty much January on, Rouge Rescue, nonstop.
Okay. And what would I do as a volunteer? Tell me how my day would go.
That really varies. You know, if you were Rouge Rescue volunteer, you would be, depending on the site, you might actually be pulling trash out of the river, or you might be helping spread mulch in a garden or a trail. You may be removing invasive plants. You may be planting trees, planting flowers, maintaining a garden that was planted in the years prior.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm missing something, guys. Lots of things. Rouge Rescue is just, it's so broad. There's so much going on that people can do a variety of things.
How are the invasive species identified, and how am I instructed if I don't know a dandelion from a cattail? How do I know that I should pull out the dandelion and leave the cattail?
That would be me.
Okay.
Well, that would be me not knowing. Cindy and Sally, our program managers, as well as even Karen and Aaron, really have experience identifying some of those invasive species, and they will show others, or if there's a program person who's going to be at that site for Rouge Rescue, they would train the people to do and identify what they're removing, whether it's showing them pictures or actually physically saying, this is what we're taking out.
Okay, and we're digging out roots, obviously, to try to get rid of that.
Yeah.
So we're on the bank and we're in the water, both? Depending on what's growing or whatever?
And depending on the river conditions.
Okay.
What's safe.
All right. What about some of the animal life? We've heard so many things about Russian ships coming in, and they're bringing invasive species that are, you know, in the aqua species as opposed to plant species. Are you looking into any of that? Or have you seen any zebra mussels that have been a problem?
I have seen a lot of zebra mussels.
Okay.
I do, one of the things that we started to do is fish surveys. And we volunteer to go out to help with the fish surveys, help with the seining and collection of the fish. So I have seen a lot of zebra mussels during that time.
Okay.
And that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, that's in the news all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I mean, everybody knows that name of zebra mussel.
Mm-hmm.
Are you actually extracting them from the water or?
No.
Okay. So they're there. We're looking for a natural way to get them to go away, I would think. No? Yes? No?
I don't know.
Okay. That's fair.
Out of our realm.
Okay.
But I do see them.
Okay. So we're, as a Rouge rescue person, we're taking out the trash and we're taking out the invasive plant species. Mm-hmm. And animal species are somebody else's job.
When it comes to Rouge rescue, mm-hmm. As Karen was talking about the fish survey that we're involved with as part of our volunteer monitoring, mm-hmm. we have a group, a team that is actually working on getting into the river and looking at what fish species are in the river at which different locations throughout the Rouge. Mm-hmm. And they have identified particularly the round goby, a fish mm-hmm. that is invasive. And not necessarily removing them, but identifying where they're at okay. and where they're progressing, you know, in the river.
And
where
what they're doing.
Right, yeah. And what they're doing. Are they seeing biodiversity go down year after year? Are we seeing changes? Are we seeing more of the round goby, et cetera?
So, are we seeing it travel farther?
Right, mm-hmm. upstream.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and numbers increasing and that mm-hmm, sort of thing too? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the decreasing numbers of the other species. Mm-hmm. One of the things about Rouge Rescue as well is a lot of the site coordinators who run the sites are municipal employees or people who are familiar with their area, what invasive species have taken over, where they need to take care of that. So they're very familiar with their own city or their own, there's a site coordinator who coordinates all of his neighbors mm-hmm. in a certain subdivision. So he knows what he wants to teach the people, and he actually does bug ID at his site.
Okay.
So he goes into get some river water and has the kids look for bugs. So that's kind of neat and something different. Some sites do bird house building. So depending on what the need is for that particular community, they'll do that. A lot of sites are clean. You know, there's not a lot of trash in the river at some of these sites. So they do the bird box building and the bat box building. They'll do the invasive removal, trail maintenance, invasive removals, mm-hmm. and so forth. So.
Yeah. Are you working with government agencies like Wayne County Parks and that sort of thing?
We partner very closely with a number of county and local municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And, okay, continuing my journey now, I'm volunteering and I'm going to get my hands dirty and pull out a picnic table or a car or something from the river. Okay, so.
Shopping cart.
Yeah, shopping cart, okay.
Lots of those.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's interesting. It's sad, but it's interesting. I'm wondering why shopping cart. Well, because you can, I guess. You throw a shopping cart in the river. So are you giving me gloves and things mm-hmm. to get started? I have all the tools I need. And then I have Karen talking to me about don't pull this one, do pull this one. Mm-hmm. So you have that sort of hands-on mm-hmm. instruction. How long is my day?
It varies based on the site. Okay. You know, some sites are there for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. Some are there for a few hours. Mm-hmm. And some sites, they see more kids than adults, so they do a lot of education.
Okay.
And sometimes there's nature walks or, like Karen was saying, the bat houses and the bird houses and bug ID type of thing. But it varies, again, based on the site and what volunteers are able to give. You mm-hmm. know, it's a Saturday in May, and if you're only able to do a couple of hours, that site coordinator is happy to have a couple of hours.
Okay. How do I qualify to be part of Rouge Rescue as a volunteer?
No training necessary.
Yeah.
Okay.
By showing up.
And the nice thing is what we do is we will put out the information about each site, whether it's family friendly, whether it's accessible for people with disabilities, whether it's, you know, if they're going to be needing heavy lifting or things of that nature. You'll know where you want to go.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Depending on what you want to do and
right.
how dirty you want to get.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. you'll have that information already, so you'll know where you're going to go. And then you'll have plenty of people there explaining to you what to do, and you don't need to be trained.
Okay. And when you talk about family-friendly, how young are we able to... I know there are some 5-year-olds who are going on 23. And,
yes. they do enjoy it, and they like to pull the invasive species. They like to pull garlic mustard. They like to do the things that we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's important that they are able to do that, and they take ownership of the river too.
Okay.
We've seen lots of little people at our events. Okay.
They love the bugs. Yeah. They love the bugs. Yep.
The things that as adults we're saying, no, not so much.
Yeah.
Well, this may be a good way to segue into the educational aspects of your organization then.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect timing because Rouge Rescue is our oldest event, so to speak, and then Rouge Education Project is our second oldest.
Oh, okay.
It's going into its 28th year while we're going into our 29th. And it has evolved over the years, and it's an exciting program. It gets students in the watershed out to the river on a field trip and also includes this in-class education for them.
Yeah, so what I do is I coordinate the Rouge Education Project, and we actually partner with schools all across the Rouge River watershed, and we've been throwing around this word watershed. What is a watershed? The Rouge River watershed actually spans, like we said, 400 plus square miles, and it spans an area as far north as Troy, as far west as Salem Township, as far south as Wayne, and as far east as Detroit. So we have a huge impact. There are over a million people that are living in the Rouge River watershed. And through our Rouge Education Project, we work with schools all throughout Southeast Michigan. So not just in the Rouge River watershed, but schools that sample, they are located outside of the watershed, but they actually conduct their sampling events on the Rouge River. So they'll go to one of the four main branches of the Rouge River. And what we do is we try to provide funding for our schools to be able to take a bus on their field trip to the Rouge River and to help facilitate training events for our teachers to teach them how to do water quality monitoring. Mm-hmm. So we work with elementary, middle, and high school, so it's a wide range of age groups, and they all get really, really excited about it. We teach how to sample for water quality in three different ways. So they'll look at the physical composition of the stream. We'll test for flow or velocity of the water, and the students will actually be measuring that. We'll also teach them how to sample for and identify the aquatic insects that we've been talking about before that some of our Rouge Rescue events also like to incorporate, because kids love searching for and identifying those insect larvae that live on the bottom of the stream bed. And then we also have chemical tests, so the kids will test for 9 different chemical parameters, and we provide the equipment a lot of the times for schools that aren't able to afford the scientific testing equipment. So we'll have 2 different kinds of chemical testing, an easier group of tests for our younger students. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple, and then a more hands-on scientific analysis with our older students. Okay. And then once all of these students complete their testing, they go out. Some of our schools go out in the fall, and then all of them actually go out in the spring. They report their data back to us. So we generate a report, which you can find on therouge.org. And we've been collecting data for this program since 1987. So it really began as a way to engage students in seeing that they can act as real-world field scientists and report their data to a third party, not just a school project. They're actually working with an organization. And through all of their data collection, we want to encourage them to create service learning projects. So either participate in Rouge Rescue, which is really convenient because spring monitoring will be occurring on May 1st this year, or the first couple weeks in May, and Rouge Rescue is on May 16th. So we're going to try and encourage our students to come up with their own projects. So if they're testing for certain chemical parameters, what are the causes of these? How can we prevent this pollution from entering the water? And then doing their own projects that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids get really engaged and really excited about it. And we work with between 20 and 30 schools each year. It's grown and shrank over the years. We've had up to 90 schools at one time.
Wow.
And 6,000 students. Now we try and keep it about, you know, 50 or 60 teachers and about 2,000 students or so. But it makes a huge impact because not only are the students learning themselves, but they're going home and talking to their parents about it, and they're working with the teachers, and the teachers are talking to their families about it, and the teachers are so engaged and excited, and I love working with them because they're really we facilitate the program, but they're the ones teaching it in the classroom.
Right.
And sometimes we offer lessons where a staff person will come in and talk about macroinvertebrates, the bug, the aquatic insects, or we'll teach the kids what a watershed is, and they always love to see somebody other than their teacher come into the classroom and give a lesson.
Right, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Are the results ever presented by the students to some sort of audience? I'm not sure who.
Traditionally, they have been presented at what we called a student congress event. So it was kind of a professional conference created for the students for them to attend. They would attend a location, they would get buses, they would get teachers would get subs, they would go to this location, and then they would share their projects. Because of funding constraints, we've had to cut back on that over the years, and now with a loss in staff, it's kind of hard to manage such a big event, especially near the end of the school year.
Right.
So what we're doing, what we're trying to work for this year is doing more of an online aspect where we have students maybe interacting on a message board. They're all sharing data with each other. They're all talking about their results. Traditionally, the teachers would report their data to us, and then we would look through it and see if, you know, something didn't seem quite right, or we would talk to them and say, oh, are you sure you calculated this way? But instead of doing that, we want the schools to be able to talk to each other and say, well, this doesn't really seem right, or what do you have going on at this site that might be giving you this level, and having the classes share all of their data and be able to kind of look at the different aspects of the watershed and see why they might be getting different readings of certain parameters.
Okay, and this has been going on almost 30 years, so the kids have come and gone so far as school. Have you seen, as a volunteer organization, any of the kids get so excited that they came back, or that they're coming back, or that they are now members of Friends of the Rouge?
Yes, and as part of the Rouge Education Project, traditionally we have recruited college students to come. We train them in the water quality monitoring techniques, and then they go out with the classroom on their field trip and help them conduct those tests, because it's a little overwhelming for teachers if they're taking, you know, 50 students out to the river at once, and they'll recruit parents. And we like to provide trained volunteers, and college students seem to be a very good resource for us over the years. So I've had college students saying, I did the Rouge Education Project as a student. I want to come back and volunteer and help, you know, this school, or, oh, this was my high school. I really want to come and help do that. And people that have been college student assistants go on to volunteer with us. One of our board members was actually a former college student assistant. And it just goes to show how it affects these students. They're learning how to be good residents of any watershed. Even if they move out of the Rouge River watershed, they're learning about things that affect the water in their backyard, and they're always going to grow up and want to do something to help, hopefully.
But that's really gratifying to see that cycle.
Absolutely.
Back. Yeah, so you definitely made an impression.
Yeah.
That's
fantastic.
Yeah,
we love to see that.
Okay. Let's take a little break, and we'll be right back after these important messages.
The grizzly bear is an iconic symbol of the American West. As many as 50,000 once roamed the western half of the United States, south of Canada. Today, their numbers have dwindled to about 1,600, isolated in the northern Rocky Mountains. For grizzlies to survive, they must be able to travel safely between large blocks of habitat. But the crucial pathways connecting these areas are being lost to development. The Vital Ground Foundation is working to ensure the future of the majestic grizzly by conserving strategically located wildlife habitat. By protecting land in exactly the right places, Vital Ground doesn't need to save thousands of acres. just the hundreds of acres that provide the greatest impact. To find out how you can help, visit www.vitalground.org. Where the grizzly can walk, the earth is healthy and whole.
Would it be crazy if you just stopped everything, packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? Would people think you'd lost your mind? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? A village crowded with Buddhist temples, not skyscrapers. A place where there isn't a word for recluse, but 1,000 words for community. Would it be crazy to go 5,000 miles from home? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To build libraries and fill them with stories? Prepare a meal with food you helped grow? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
And we're back. Thanks so much for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. Today we're talking to Friends of the Rouge, and what an exciting group this is. What an exciting everything. You have an exciting webpage. You have exciting projects. So and you operate year-round, and this is Michigan, so that's really cool, too. On the list of programs, I have something I'm going to attempt to pronounce, and it's the benthic macroinvertebrate sampling. Okay.
You got it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Who's going to talk about that? Erin?
So our benthic macroinvertebrate sampling program is commonly known as our bug hunts. So really, benthic macroinvertebrate, if we want to break down the word, I could tell you what it means. So benthic means that these are the bottom-dwelling organisms. They live on the bottom of the stream bed. These are our insect larvae, our clams, our mussels, our snails. And then macro, the word macro means that you can see it with your naked eye. So you don't need a microscope to find these little organisms in the water. And invertebrate, as many of us know, means it doesn't have a backbone. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking for are the aquatic insects living in the water that live on the bottom of the stream bed, don't have a backbone. So this program was started in the late 90s, I believe, and it's a way to get volunteers involved in conducting real-world citizen science, so to speak, where we are sending teams of volunteers out to the river, out to different sites on the river. So we'll go out in the fall, in the winter, and in the spring, and they will sample for these different aquatic insects. So when each event is organized, there is a team leader. So what we do as an organization is we train team leaders to learn how to identify the aquatic insects and sample for them. So they are given a group of about 6 people, and a lot of the times we have students that come, or kids, people with kids, and they go out to 2 different sites along the Rouge River. So the team leader will actually get into the water, and they'll sample, they'll kind of kick up the bottom of the stream bed. We call it a riffle dance. So they kind of shake their feet on the bottom of the stream bed, kind of get those dead leaves and items from the bottom of the river into a net, and then they empty that net into what we call a sorting tray. And it's just a little photo tray. And then the volunteers on the stream or on the stream bank will actually pick through and find the insects. So kids are really good for this because they have really great eyes and they can pick out all the different organisms that they can find that are living in those dead leaves. And once that's done, we sort them and categorize them and count them. So however many insects that we find are indicators of the quality of the water. So when we talked about the Rouge Education Project before, when you do a chemical monitoring event, you are looking at a snapshot in time. So what does the water look like at this moment? When we look at the benthic macroinvertebrates, we're looking at what does the water look like over time? Is it healthy enough for these creatures to live long term? Was there a big storm event that has washed a lot of these organisms away? How clean is the water? So some of our aquatic insects have gills, much like fish, And if the water is very polluted, they're not able to breathe, and they're not able to survive. So when we are looking at the different types of insects that we find and the number, that's going to give us a score. So there's actually a form that we fill out, the team leaders fill out, and it's going to give you an overall water quality score. Is the water poor quality? Is it fair quality? Is it good quality or is it excellent quality? And different types of insects will tell us how well the water is doing. So this is an activity that really anybody can get involved in. We have, like I said, 3 sampling events throughout the year. And we have registration available on our website, therouge.org. And you can sign up there to participate. We have a sampling event in January, which is our stonefly search. So that's one specific type of insect that we're looking for. And in the spring is our spring bug hunt, and that's usually in April. So you can go and sign up there and then get assigned to a team and get to go out and sample for those insects. It's a really exciting and cool event. Lots of people don't really think that anything lives in the Rouge, and then they get to see all the insects that actually do.
You mentioned the mussels and clams in this area. How large are they?
It really depends. They don't really get that big in the Rouge.
Okay.
For the most part. And when we're sampling for those, we don't find a lot of mussels or clams. Sometimes we do, or unless they're an invasive clam or something. But with those, we're really just seeing what's present. We're counting them. We're saying, oh, are there mussels present? Or, you know, are there snails? Did we see any wildlife while we were out there? That's a little part of the sampling event. But in the Rouge, our insects don't get very big, and our mussels and clams don't typically get very big. Sometimes they can get...
I always think of them coming from the east as opposed to this area. And a stonefly, what is a stonefly?
So a stonefly is it's just an insect larva. They have 2 big, long tails and big, long antennae. They swim in kind of a funky S shape, and they're just a really good indicator of water quality. So if we're finding stoneflies, then chances are the water in that area is pretty good most of the time. Okay. So they actually hatch out in January, which is why we do the sample in January, which is pretty cold. But we have a lot of dedicated volunteers that go out, and they really enjoy it's a good activity just to get outside even when it's cold and just to get to the water.
A lot of great things to see. So
absolutely.
So you'll go through the ice if it's particularly cold.
Yes. And I don't know if it was this past year or the year before, but they were armed with their axes, and they were cracking up the ice and getting in that way. But luckily our team leaders are trained, and not everybody's going in the water, just one person's going in the water. So we always think about safety and make sure that it's safe for everybody.
Okay. And they're dressed appropriately and
exactly.
Wear waders to stay dry.
Yep.
Okay. The frog and toad survey, similar, but...
So the frog and toad survey is something that our volunteer... It's an ongoing process. So what we do is we train volunteers how to listen for and identify different species of frogs and toads. And they're assigned to an area of the watershed, which we talked about before. So they are assigned to a block, which is near their home. And then they will go there at sunset in the spring and listen for and identify the different species of frogs and toads that are available or that they can hear. And similar to the benthic macroinvertebrate program, absence or presence of these species are also indicators of watershed health, general watershed health. Are there wetlands? Are there healthy wetlands for these frogs and toads to live in? So that's kind of an ongoing volunteer opportunity that we have for people. It's kind of a commitment when you want to do it. You're committing to, you know, a few minutes a day, a couple times a week throughout the spring, and reporting that data back to us. So what we do is we look at the presence or absence of these species over time and analyze how if there are improvements in certain areas of the actual watershed.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen improvements over the years?
I have not worked with that program specifically, so I'm not sure what the general trend is over time. I know that we have seen different areas have different species come up, but as far as over time, I don't have as much experience with that.
That's actually one of the things this year that we're really focused on is taking all that data and starting to really analyze it. So Sally, our volunteer monitoring program manager, she's really going to dig into that data because we have all of this information. Right. Now it's time to put it in a sensible package.
So of all the things that you've been looking at over the past, we'll call it 30 years, those bits of data have all been stored someplace. Mm-hmm. That's
and the Frog and Toad Survey, I believe, started in 1998. So most of our volunteer monitoring started in 1998. So we have data going back that far.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what we see. I mean, it's fascinating when you see it, this quarter square mile block of the Rouge River watershed, and there's these species of frogs and toads calling, and you're thinking, wow. And there's nothing else around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a neat thing, and it's really fun to hear them calling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And are the sounds different from season to season in this area?
Well, it depends. Different species call at different times of the year. So all of the species have their own unique call. So their individual calls don't change, but you will hear them calling at different times. So I can't give you examples of specific, the first frogs that call, but the first frogs that call are different than, usually there's a sequence of when the frogs start to come back to life and start calling for their mates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And the other program listed was a river restoration.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that a little bit with some of the gardens and how that's related to some of the rescue projects.
Right. Rouge Rescue really falls under that umbrella, sort of. And this is really what we're doing on land and along the water. So woody debris management, looking at providing habitat for the insects, the creatures, and the fish, and everybody living in the river, mm-hmm. as well as also looking at recreation along the river. So how do we balance the woody debris that's in the river from the flashiness, log jams, things like that,
right.
As well as what's happening on land. So the native gardens, the rain gardens, plantings, invasive plants, trees, etc. So really thinking about how do we help the water and how do we slow down the flow of stormwater from rushing into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
And infrastructure.
And infrastructure, right. So that program is pretty broad and it encompasses so many different things. Sometimes Cindy is our program manager there and she does a number of workshops, whether they're for residents or for municipal employees, and they're open to everybody. So we get a lot of people out who are interested in native gardens and rain gardens and just need the next level of expertise and information to get, and they can get organized and install their own garden. We work with a number of groups on that throughout the watershed. And then there are some that are educational, just in general, being good stewards type of workshops.
Over the years, one of the things I've noticed in Hines Park is less mowing. And there are some areas that have become swamps. They were areas where rain collected a little bit, but then as soon as things were dry enough, they'd mow through and then nothing happened. Now we have tall grasses, we have cattails, mm-hmm. we have what have you back there. Any comments on any of that management?
Well, what that does is really stabilizes the stream bank. So when you think about a stretch of river, and if it's just grass on either side of the river, a lot of that soil is going to erode directly into the river, which is not good for water quality. So especially in the Wayne County Parks, there is a project where they're establishing what we call grow zones, and they're planting native seeds, and all of those plants are going to establish very deep root systems that hold that soil into place and directly impact and improve water quality by naturally managing the stream bank and providing a strong natural bed, so we're not getting that erosion into the water
and filtering runoff. It also helps to create those buffer zones, those grow zones around the water to filter the runoff from the roads, motor oil, fertilizers.
Right.
pesticides.
What about the, we're talking about mowing, what about the freeway mowing? To me, that doesn't make any sense. It makes sense to let things grow and to be able to hold that water a little bit so it doesn't all end up in the sewer system on, you know, from 94 or what have you, where you have banks where you can just let things grow. You don't need to have that mowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in some areas I've been seeing more growth along the freeway. So I think that as we evolve and we continue to learn more mm-hmm. about what's working and what's best for each area based on drainage or the watershed, whatever, right. I think that we'll get more creative with that.
I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. Any new programs on the horizon for Friends of the Rouge?
Well, not necessarily new, but ongoing. We are working on the Rouge River Water Trail in conjunction with a number of community partners, other nonprofits, businesses, other community organizations, as well as municipalities and the county, on really looking at the Lower Rouge of how we can embrace a water trail. And we've even been working with the National Park Service in looking at that designation of a national water trail and what that will take. So we know in the Rouge we have some unique water quality issues, and we have just a unique environment that you can go from a very wooded area upstream down into the industrial part of the Rouge, and it's a unique place that people want to come and check out. We have a kayak tour each year in partnership with a local kayak company, and they help lead us down the industrial part of the Rouge, and it's really incredible to experience that, and we know that lots of people would enjoy that, and we hope to eventually, as we work through all of the pieces of what this looks like, to get more kayak launches and to have places where people can get out and enjoy, you know, whether it's lunch or something along the river and have it make sense for them, that we'll get there and we can connect with the other part of the region, other parts of the region, the other rivers throughout Southeast Michigan.
Tell us about the industrial area. What geographic area are you talking about?
I'm thinking about everything from probably even Michigan Avenue down to the mouth of the Rouge. So going past all of the old and new, I mean, there's some historic mm-hmm. industry there. So going all the way downstream along there, we have a number of plants and products that are being generated there or stored there, just a number of industries working along the river. And that part, it gets pretty deep because it's a channel and it's been set up that way for large ships and freighters coming in. And that's pretty incredible too, if you're in a kayak, to see the freighters and to see just the size of the buildings from the water, and you're just this little boat looking up mm-hmm. at them. So that part of it's definitely the most industrial.
Tell us about the kayak trip. How long was that?
It's about 2 hours, and we just had one. We have one every fall, so it was done in September. And it's usually a Saturday morning, and people come out. And this year we had 44 people join okay. us, and that's our largest group. I've been doing the trip for 9 years. And it's an experience because you get in, and you're launching on concrete, in the concrete channel part of the river. Okay. And so you're kind of kicking off on concrete and floating down and starting to paddle, and you see this nature alongside the concrete. And as you're moving along, and then these huge buildings appear, you know, to the left and to the right, and you're kind of just, whoa, this is incredible. And then there's parked freighters and sometimes moving freighters, and you have to get out of the way. And of course, there's a lot of construction right now. There's a lot of improvement going on, and particularly around Fort Street. Okay. And there's, you know, they're looking at doing some historic things along that bridge and setting up, building a park, and that's near the Marathon property in the Oakwood Heights neighborhood. And it's pretty incredible when you see the renderings of what it will be and mm-hmm. what it is today. I think it's fun for everybody who's gone on the kayak trip in these 9 years, in a couple years, to look at what it's going to become. And hopefully there'll be a kayak launch there.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, when you talk about launching from the concrete area, that's the Michigan Avenue area, Fairlane area?
It was in Melvindale, okay. the community center in Melvindale. Right behind that, they okay. allow you to launch.
Not too far from mm-hmm. there, then. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, just to get a kind of a general idea, yeah. because the Rouge is so huge, as we talked about right. earlier. Okay. Anything else new? Anything else you're looking forward to starting?
I think we're just excited because we've gone through such a transition. At the end of May of 2014, we lost a pretty large federal grant that we had relied on for 22 years. Through the EPA and then through Wayne County, we received those funds. And it was the Rouge River National Wet Weather Demonstration Project. And it was pretty significant, hundreds of millions of dollars into the Rouge River watershed communities. And a lot of work was done between the counties, the communities, our group, other nonprofit groups and community groups that have utilized those funds to help fix, restore, repair, do different projects along the Rouge. And so we've gone through that transition of losing the funding, and now we're looking to the future of, you know, we have all of these proven strategies, programs that we're proud of and that we can stand behind and provide really great data and a resource to the community. Where do we take it? So, right. You know, it's that fun phase of figuring out where we go next and mm-hmm. what that looks like. And I think, you know, continuing to engage volunteers.
Okay. We were talking about some of the comparisons and comparing data to see how the fish are doing over the past 30 years. How are the bugs doing over the past 30 years? Do you have an advisory committee or advisory members of some sort who are actually scientists who can help you with some of that analysis?
We utilize scientists from everywhere.
Okay.
Biologists, particularly, you know, we're based on the University of Michigan Dearborn campus,
mm-hmm.
and that's where our office is, and we have a wonderful relationship with so many professors, even here at Henry Ford, and we utilize their knowledge and their expertise, as well as there's just so much knowledge within our government and community organizations that we tap into and utilize them as well.
Okay, all right. We're going to take a little break and be right back.
It's Rebecca getting in the front of the canoe. It's her second time canoeing in her life with her mom. And here goes Emily and Dustin, first time on the Rouge. Hey, there go Ben and Lauren. There's Pam, Al, and Marianne. Vicky right here. Just missed her. A little bit of a backup there. So let's see. Here comes Pam right through this rapid. Uh-oh, we gotta stay to the right. Let me go get her unstuck. Okay, if you take it backwards, you're okay. That's what I like to do, it backwards. Okay, we're going under the bridge. Just.
And we're back. Thanks so much for listening to Impact. This time we are talking to Friends of the Rouge, and what an exciting organization this is. There's just so much there. And we're going to talk about, we have talked about all these different projects, all these different events, all these different things that require volunteers. How do we become a volunteer of Friends of the Rouge?
Really, you have to decide what you're interested in. So
okay.
We do all these different programs and have a variety of opportunities. If there are individuals who happen to have a knowledge or expertise about aquatic insects, that might be what they're interested in, or they might be more interested in somehow getting involved with the Rouge Education Project or even helping out in the office. It just depends on the individual. And if someone's interested in Rouge Rescue, if you know you can't commit to regular ongoing volunteer work, but you know that you want to give back, and it's a nice different time of year, different change of pace in the summer or late spring, early summer there in May, and it's an opportunity to come out for a few hours or for the whole day, put on some gloves, put on, you know, a t-shirt that we get that says Rouge Rescue, and get to work, and you're a part of something in the community, something bigger than we are as individuals. And then with our Rouge Education Project, there's opportunities for individuals to come out and be trained, and then also to partner with schools and work with the kids directly, be out there when they're at the Rouge River for the first time in some cases, and really just watch that and be a part of it and help students, help the teacher, because it's a field trip too, so it does get a little busy. And then there's opportunities with really everything. I mean, if there are individuals who are interested in getting involved with the water trail, we're always looking for volunteers. So I would encourage people to check out our website on therouge.org or even call our office at 313-792-9900 and see what we have going on. There's always something going on.
Okay.
Or if really our volunteers can be people who come to our workshops, because they often go out into the community and do great work, whether it's planting a garden or helping someone else plant a native garden.
Okay. Talk a little bit about the workshops, if you could. We haven't really touched on that much.
Yeah, our riparian corridor management or grow zone maintenance workshops, they're They run the gamut of hands-on to kind of educational, where it's a teaching experience where people can sit and listen and just absorb information. Some of the recent ones that I've actually been to have been about native gardens, and it's involved three different types of gardens that people could put in a residential, you know, property. And they're really interesting because you learn about the plants, you learn about the grasses that you might be able to install, and you start to think about things. And then sometimes there's even expert support where afterwards you can go over your layout and talk about, this is my yard, what can we do here, what can I plant, you know, and the expert will help guide some of that conversation.
Okay. Are you looking at attracting maybe different types of birds or insects, mm-hmm. different types of butterflies and things, moss, what have mm-hmm. you, that you haven't normally wouldn't see in your yard?
Yeah, a lot of the plants, the native plants to Michigan, actually attract butterflies. So there are other programs that our team has expertise in or knowledge of, and they can partner with those programs that if people are interested in getting like a butterfly certified habitat or type, you know, backyard habitat, we can at least help guide them, mm-hmm. And then they can seek that through other organizations.
Okay. One of the other reasons for the rain gardens and using native plants is it helps to mitigate stormwater runoff. As the city gets developed, cities get developed and more impervious surfaces are introduced, the stormwater that would normally be filtered through the ground gets rushed off into the street, overwhelms the storm drains, and then you have combined sewage overflows. So the rain gardens help to hold some of that in, some of that water, until it can be naturally filtered through the ground instead of just running into the storm drain. So that's a big reason why those are being used, and that's when we start to use the term green infrastructure for those types of projects. And it can also filter pesticides and fertilizers and whatnot before it goes into the storm drains. And the native plants, the reason we use native plants is because they are, number one, used to Michigan conditions. They will survive the dry conditions, the cold, and the crazy weather that Michigan typically has. And the roots are very deep, as opposed to like native grass that you would normally grow, turf grass. It's mm-hmm. about 3-inch roots.
Right.
These plants have sometimes a foot and a half, 2 feet deep roots.
Wow.
So they really hold the soil and take the water down into the ground.
And Amy, from what you've said, there are volunteers that can help help you with your backyard, I guess would be the right way to put that.
Yeah, definitely. I would recommend that people look at our website again and see what workshops are being offered. They kind of cycle through every couple of years or year even, and change up based on what we're seeing our needs and what feedback has been from previous year's workshops. So Cindy is typically our instructor, so to speak,
okay.
managing those programs, and she usually is there, and she is usually one of the experts. So she really kind of feels it out and sees what people need and what's going on, and seeing where we can provide the greatest resource.
Okay. Is there an application for volunteers?
No.
Just show
no,
up.
There's not yet. Well, and just register if there are things that require registration to show up, or call us and find out. Typically, you know, even with Rouge Rescue, we like to know who's coming.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody that works with the kids will obviously have to be screened.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be an application process there.
Okay.
General volunteers, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And coming up in December, you have a membership meeting,
mm-hmm.
your annual membership meeting.
It will be our annual membership meeting. It's on Tuesday, December 9th in the evening at a local facility. Very nice location. We are excited this year to kind of shake it up a little bit. We are going to have a panel on green infrastructure, and we are going to utilize some local experts to facilitate a conversation and a Q&A about green infrastructure, what it is, what it means, and what's going on the local and regional level, as well as what can I, as a resident, do?
Mm-hmm.
What does green infrastructure mean for me in my property, and what can I do to impact that?
Can you answer any of those questions now? Briefly?
Well, briefly, for me, what I would do, and I would be curious to hear, I would love to have Cindy's knowledge and be able to plant my own native or rain garden, just my whole yard at my house. But that would be the biggest thing I think I could do. And there's little things, too, that, you know, they're not what people may think of as green infrastructure, but rain barrels and diverting some of that storm water away from the storm drain and utilizing it, and different things you can do even with what you're applying to your lawn and what you're planting and, mm-hmm. you know, when you're doing certain things in your home.
All right. Okay. Tell us about the meeting.
This will be, we have a meeting every year. This involves our board of directors elections, which take place annually, as well as just a general update on how things have been going for Friends of the Rouge this year. Financial situation, we distribute our annual report. So there are some business aspects, and then there will be some educational aspects.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And anybody can go to this meeting?
Yeah, everyone is welcome. The annual membership meeting is open to members for free. There will be a dinner aspect that there's a charge for that if individuals would like to come to that.
Okay.
And obviously members have the vote.
Right.
Right. But anybody can show up for the meeting and mm-hmm. find out what the organization is all about. And
absolutely.
Especially the green panel. That sounds
right.
fascinating.
Right.
And it's always all about the food, so anybody can stay for dinner. So.
Right.
Okay, sounds wonderful. And that's a good way for people to become basically ongoing volunteers, too, because if you're a member, you're going to get a little more involved, a little more enthusiasm, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and everything is out there on that website, which is?
TheRouge.org.
Okay, and the phone number again?
313-792-9900.
Okay, thank you so much. Wanted to wrap up with a little more detail on some fun facts about the Rouge Rescue, since that's your oldest project,
right.
and as I said, the one probably the most well-known. And we talked about debris.
Yeah. Well, over the years, so since 1986, I'll just run down the list here. We have engaged over 54,000 volunteers. So about 1,900 volunteers each year. We have had work done at 817 sites throughout the watershed, and we have removed nearly 47,000 cubic yards of trash. So that the visualization of that, I can't even wrap my mind around. We have removed 64 vehicles from the river, 1,738 tires, and 509 shopping carts.
Okay.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is. How do you dispose of that at the end of the day on Rouge Rescue Day?
Typically, one of the municipal partners handles that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the sheer volume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the kind of thing you put in a trunk and take someplace.
Right. Well, even the invasive plant material has to be, destroyed properly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you burn that?
No.
Okay.
That's typically thrown in the trash so that it doesn't propagate.
Okay. All right. Okay, very good. Anything else you'd like to add? Anybody? All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much,
Thank
ladies.
You.
This has been a really, really interesting segment. So,
Thank
Friends
you.
Of the Rouge, and one more time, Amy, give us the webpage and the phone number, please.
TheRouge.org, so that's TheRouge.org, and the phone number is 313-792-9900.
Thank you. And you have been listening to Impact, and this is a show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. Thanks to Mark Hall for producing Impact, and I will remind you that the views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is a pre-recorded show.
Hi, Mark Hall, producer for Impact, with news of the latest events for Friends of the Rouge that you can participate in. This Saturday, November 15th, 2014, from noon until 1:30, join President of the Holiday Nature Preserve Association and Friends of the Rouge member Bill Craig on a guided hike through the beautiful Holiday Nature Preserve. No dogs welcome. Please meet at Hicks Park off of Hicks Road, north of Warren, south of Joy, on the west side of the road. This is the Holiday Nature Preserve at Hicks Park in Westland, Michigan. Registration is preferred by going to therouge.org on their events page. For more information, contact ecassidy@therouge.org. The Friends of the Rouge annual meeting will be held Tuesday, December 9th, 2014, from 5:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. This event will be held at the Friends of the Rouge University of Michigan Dearborn, 4901 Evergreen Road, here in Dearborn, Michigan, 48128. Again, for more information, do email ecassidy, that's ecassady, at therouge.org. And on Saturday, December 13th, 2014, there will be an Explore the Rouge Heritage Park by Snowshoe event from 10 a.m. until noon. Join a naturalist from the Farmington Hills Nature Center on a voyage by snowshoe at Heritage Park. If there's no snow, there will be a hike. Meet in the parking lot by the Nature Center off of Farmington Road between 10 and 11 mile roads. Limited snowshoe rentals will be available for a fee. Call 313-792-9621. Registration is preferred by going to therouge.org on their events page. This has been Mark Hall for Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What do you get when you take a bunch of public radio nerds and shut them in a room with computer geeks? Well, in addition to some bizarrely socially awkward offspring, you get the Public Radio Player. It's a new iPhone app that streams hundreds of public radio stations, including this one, straight to your iPhone and iPod Touch. You can get more information at publicradioplayer.org.
WHFR.FM invites you to come on and take a ride to the Planet Funk. Hello, everybody. Your DJ Commander, Mark Anthony, commander of the Funkified Starship. You know, we land on the campus of Henry Ford College from 2 to 4 p.m. every Tuesday afternoon with the best in funky music for you. I've got classic P-Funk. I've got old school funk. I've got future funk. I've got jazzy funk. Whatever kind of funk it is, just lay your hands on the radio and you're going to get the funk. That's the Planet Funk, Tuesday afternoons from 2 to 4. You can listen online in cyberspace at www.whfr.fm or on your radio at 89.3 on your FM dial. That's right, the Planet Funk, 2 to 4 p.m. on whfr.fm. It's the Planet Funk.
This is Jen Cass, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Such a smart choice.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the